evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. In Upland, July 16th, it's The Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 with Jimmy Stevens of the Safaris, Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, J.T. Carter, founder of the Crests. The others on the lineup we'll hear from tonight. Later in the program, it's Shirley Reeves from the Shirelles. First, though, Eugene Pitt from the Jive 5. And their sound changed over the years, but in the beginning, it was doo-wop. One of the tunes that the Jive 5 had, the song Never Never. I know this isn't the first one, but I'd like to address this. The song Never Never, it makes me think every time, can you paint a picture of what the neighborhood was like, Brooklyn, folks standing around the burn barrel? Was that you and what became the Jive 5?
Well, back in the days, you know, like there was always guys out on the corner singing harmonies or in the hallways, you know? And I'm one of those guys. I sang in the hallway.
Okay.
Never Never was a song that I wrote. We had a recording date and we didn't have a song, so I wrote it on the way to the studio.
Oh, you had the date before you had the material for it.
That's right.
Oh, beautiful. Oh my gosh. Well, you know, talking about the street corner groups, J.T. Carter described the scene, in essence, you were either a singer or, what he said, a warrior. So is that how it was in Brooklyn as well?
Definitely. That happened in the same way. Wherever you find music, you will find that same routine. Well, I was a singer, and a lot of guys, you know, that wasn't singing was out there fighting.
Yep.
No, I wasn't a fighter. I was a singer. You can let Michael tell you that. He wasn't a fighter either. He was a lover.
That's right. That's right. Well, JT and the gang, they were Manhattan-based, you guys Brooklyn. Did you ever come across these guys on the corner, or if not JT and the Crests, were there other groups out there on the street corner that became known acts as well?
Oh, yeah. Back in my neighborhood, there was a lot of groups. We had, you know, Little Anthony and the Imperials down the way, and then we had Swain with the Persuasions, and there were always groups all around.
Oh, wow.
And all the groups, they knew each other. Like, we get out on the corner, like, before we even start recording, we get out on the corners and be singing, trying to impress the girls, you know? And that's how we got out there, the Jive 5. Some girls say, oh, that's 5, Jive, Jive. And we just took that name and ran with it.
Before you guys were the Jive 5, were you also the Genies at one point? Did I read that right?
I sang with the Genies, right? And Lord Johnson and Freddie Jones, they went to Long Beach, and they recorded out there, and I stayed in Brooklyn and started the Jive 5.
Gotcha.
So when they went to Long Beach, they went out there and recorded Who's Knocking at My Door.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Claude Johnson, Freddie Jones, Estelle Williams, and Pasco Cleveland and myself. Freddie Jones and Sonny Johnson, like I said, went to Long Beach. And Estelle, she started a group in Brooklyn called Genie and the Girlfriend. And they recorded It's Me Knocking. And I stayed with the Jive 5 and we recorded My True Story and a lot of others.
I'm a happy man. I'm a happy man.
So the Jive 5, that was just completely named. One of the girls threw that your way. It was not related to the old Count Basie tune, Jive at 5. Nothing like that.
No.
I know that song came out about when you were maybe 2. So one of the first things that you read regarding the Jive 5 is that the group, beyond the songs that the group was known for, is that the group outlasted so many of the other doo-wop groups by, in essence, remodeling as a soul group. In the later 60s, you went from doo-wop into the soul thing.
Well, what was the reason for that? Because the Jive 5, what we did, we always tried to stay in the music. When the music changed, we changed. During the British invasion, the Jive 5 music changed. We went into Happy Man, which was a different type of groove for the Jive 5, and we tried to stay with that time.
I'm a happy man. I'm a happy man.
Well, that's a great way of looking at it, changing with the times instead of hanging on to a music that, now, of course, we're here celebrating the music of doo-wop and the fact that you guys are still doing it, but at this point in your history, you were really just changing to fit what was going on the rest of the world.
Right, exactly.
So a little bit later, after you had remodeled yourself, ended up becoming the Jive 5, spelled with a couple of Y's. What was the suggestion for the Jive?
The reason for that, because at the time, we had lost one of the fellas in the group, passed away. And we went to do shows, and they would say, you know, I hired 5 guys, and it's only 4. And I, you know, tried to explain to them, but they used to dock our money. So we just changed to the Y, so it wouldn't indicate 5 people.
Okay. Now, going back to J.T. Carter for one second, I had him break down for me and for our listeners. I had him break down the way a doo-wop group lays things out. And I'm curious, once I was listening to the later Jive 5 material, comparing it to the earlier doo-wop stuff, beyond the songs themselves, is there a big difference with the vocal arrangements? That is it more of the instrumentation making it a different sound? You've got the Waka-Jawa guitar in there as opposed to the vocal harmonies. Was there a huge, huge difference between the way the vocals are laid out when you guys were doing the soul?
No, well, the majority of the songs that the Jive 5 recorded, I did the arranging. I put it the Jive 5 way. So whatever way it came out, that's what the A&R man had to go with.
Okay. That's a great position. So many people are in the position of doing what management was trying to tell them to do, but you had more saying.
Yeah, it was more of an inside feeling. Like we recorded a Steely Dan, A19.
Yeah?
And I took that and I did my arrangement, and you see how the Jive 5 brought it out.
That is one that I have to track down. That's...
You don't have A19?
I don't have your version of it.
Oh, you got to get it.
No, I'm going to track it down. If there's a cool cover of it, I definitely want to hear it. Leaving that's going to be playing in the background as we discuss this one. Did you actually know the Steely Dan guys, or was this just a tune that you heard, contacted the management, wanted to redo it?
This was a tune that I heard, and I just wanted to do it my way.
Okay. That's Eugene Pitt of the Jive 5, part of an all-star lineup at the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2, coming to Upland July 16th. Information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Also on the bill, Jimmy Stevens of the Safaris, Maurice Williams of the Zodiacs, J.T. Carter, founder of the Crests, and Shirley Reeves of the Shirelles. We'll hear from Shirley later in the program. She thinks I'm crazy, but I'm growing old. Hey, 19. This is going back a little bit earlier into the career again, but let's go back now to 1961, the first release, a single, My True Story. I understand that you co-wrote this one, and I'd love to hear the inspiration for the song, whether it's the song itself or maybe even just the sound you were going for.
Well, at the time, like I said, I was singing with Genies, and I met this here guy, Oscar Walser, and he wanted to bring me to a record label, which was Beltone. Now, when I went to Beltone, he set up an audition for the group, the original Jive 5, and we went to Beltone, and we were singing songs for Les Kayan, who was the president. He said, wow, you guys could really sing. You know, I like all the stuff you're doing. He said, do you have any more songs? I said, well, we have a song we don't like. And he said, why you don't like it? I said, because it's a true story. He said, let me hear it. Love will make you happy, and love will make you cry. Love will make the tears fall when your lover says goodbye. I sang him My True Story. He said, that's a hit. Now, I didn't co-write it with anyone. I wrote the song, It's just that they put their names on it because they did the music arrangement.
Ah, that business, right.
And that's what they did back then. You know, when you come to a record company with a song, they want 50% of the publishing because they put their music to it.
And my true story, it really is a true story.
It's a true story.
How did it start? Tell me the event that happened that made this have to become a song. You were longing after some girl. Something happened that made this become a song.
This was a true story because, well, the girl that I wrote the song about, Phyllis Little, that was her name. She and I, we had a falling out, and she wound up marrying my best friend, Sonny. And I don't know, but somewhere down the line, their marriage didn't turn out that well, and God bless, she passed on. But that was what the song was about. Names have been changed because I didn't want people to really know who she was. But they know now because I put a picture. And Phil Goya's, he had a book, They All Sang on the Corner. And if you look in that book on the end, there's a picture of Phyllis and I.
Oh, nice. Something else for me to track down then there. Wow. Some of the other songs that the Jive 5 had around this time, a little bit later, not charting as well, but all great tunes. Some, as I mentioned, I was raised on this stuff, so things that I've always loved, things like Holy Gully Callin' Time, these Golden Rings. And so I'm curious about if you have other favorites from the early years that didn't make it as high on the charts that maybe you think should have. Maybe these were the great B-sides that you really wish they were the A-side. Any tunes that really should have seen more light than they did?
Yeah, we had some tunes that we did for ambient sound.
Where do we go from here? I want to know.
That I figured should have hit the charts, and they did. Where Do We Go From Here? It was one of my favorite tunes on the ambient sound label. And a good friend of mine, Marsha Vance, she brought that tune to me. I recorded it just before she passed away. And that's one of my favorite songs, Where Do We Go From Here?
Do you make sure to try to include that in performances these days, or are you really kind of forced to do the bigger hits?
Well, it should have been a hit.
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
that.
Yeah. We talked about the name change, the Y, with the Jive 5. And at some point in the late 70s, it looks like, you did go back to the Jive 5 with the I's in the spelling again.
Right.
And so is
but
it as simple as...
We were also Ebony, Ivory, and Jade. There was only three of us. So we went out as Ebony, Ivory, and Jade. Then we recorded, when we got the group back together, as Showdown. Then we got me and one of the other guys in the group and had two girls. We were Stink.
Hmm.
We've been running all through the music field with different names.
Yeah, more names than the Zodiacs. Wow.
Yes, Go Down, Sting, Ebony, Ivory, and Jade, the Jive 5 with the two spellings.
On the Lord of Hero Lightning, on the Lord of Hero Lightning, Nick, on the Ricky Tiggy Low, while living number one Nickelodeon.
Now, Eugene, I've tracked this stuff down, and believe me, it'll be playing in the background as we speak. The doo-wop bumpers for Nickelodeon.
Okay.
So many people would have seen these and not even realizing for a second that they were hearing you and the Jive 5.
I wrote all the bumpers for the Nickelodeon for about 17 years, and the group they sang in the background. I did most of that writing also.
How did this deal come about? You going from a singing group to...
Well, there was a good friend of mine, Tom Pompicello.
Okay.
He came to me and said they have this new company, Nickelodeon, and they want a top of the hour tune. So that's what I wrote. Nick, 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 Nickelodeon. I wrote that and he presented it to them. It flipped out over me.
Nickelodeon.
And from there, I started getting all the Nickelodeon work, writing the bumpers and a lot of stuff I wrote for Nickelodeon.
One of the bumpers shows some really grainy footage with three men wearing orange suits singing some of the Nickelodeon, the TV network. Is this by chance actually you and a couple of the other folks?
Well, it was the John 5, yeah.
Okay, wow. This is something that I was not able to track down, but you also did some work on IDs for HBO Family.
Yeah, we did some stuff for them for the Honeymooners. We did some bumpers for them also. Showtime Honeymooners. The only place you see the show is right here.
HBO, okay.
Yeah, I did a lot of that stuff too.
Oh man, once again, people are hearing this stuff all the time and not knowing. That's incredible. That's Eugene Pitt of the Jive 5, part of an all-star lineup at the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 coming to Upland July 16th. Information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Also on the bill, Shirley Reeves of the Shirelles. We'll hear from Shirley later in the program. Here's one that it wasn't until I was getting ready for this conversation that the song What Time Is It, another one of the biggies for the Jive 5. I have to say,
What Time It was written by a friend of mine, Bob Feldman.
Okay.
He came to Belton. He said, Gene, I got a smash record for you. I said, let me hear it. So he said, What Time Is It? It's Time For Love. I said, well, yeah, I can take that and put the Jive 5 touch to it, and that's what you got.
Now, I have to say, there is a striking similarity. It is this close to I Only Have Eyes For You. Now, which one came first? Do you know, by chance?
That was one of their early year songs, The Flamingos, back in the early 50s.
And anytime I hear What Time Is It, it makes me think of that song.
Probably because you hear that bass line. Dong, 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 dong. Down, dong, ding, down. That's what you hear. And that's the similar lines that they have in I Only Have Eyes For You.
These days, forgive the play on words, but the lineup these days, it's this close to being the Pitts. Isn't there two, three of your brothers? There are several Pitts in the lineup these days.
There was Frank Pitt, Herbert Pitt, and myself, Eugene Pitt.
That's in the lineup today.
Yeah.
And one of the other guys, don't you have one of the other fellows from way back?
Yeah, we had Beatrice Pitt.
That's it.
He was with the group for like 48 years. Casey Spencer, he's been with the group like 48 years.
So many folks hope to have a career that's lasting only maybe a few years or 5 or 10 years, and you guys, close to 50 years now. That is incredible.
53 years to be exact.
53, my gosh. Well, with 5 acts on the bill with this Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 in Upland coming up in just a couple of weeks now, with 5 acts on the bill, you're going to have a shorter set. So what is it that just has to be included? I could guess at a few. My True Story, you said? Is that a typical opener or a closer for you?
That's a closer.
Okay. What is the thing that really gets the audience going?
Well, we try to get every song we sing. Get the audience going.
So if you don't have time for all of your songs, you may just shorten them and make a wonderful medley for us then.
Well, we used to do that also with Never Never. Yeah, we did a lot of other songs in the medley. You know, if we push for time, then we'll cut Never Never out and just do Happy Man, My True Story, and What Time Is It?
Nice, okay. Well, I'm a happy man. What time is it? These were a couple of ones that I'd written down, hoping that we would get. I know that there's going to be a lot of people in the audience hoping for them as well. These folks that I named just a little bit ago, Jimmy Stevens and J.T. Carter, Shirley Reeves and Maurice Williams, are any of these folks old compatriots of yours? You had to have been crossing paths with these folks over the years.
Well, yeah. For one, Shirley and I, we even went on Dick Clark Caravan of Stars together.
Oh.
I've known Shirley forever.
Oh, my goodness.
She's a real loving person. And her, Mickey, Doris, all of the girls, I'm telling you, we were all real friends.
It'll be fantastic to get you guys up there. I don't know if we could even get you guys on the stage at the same time, but it'll be a treat to have you guys on the same stage, if not separated by a few minutes.
Well, you know, just doing a show like this, like a family reunion, you know, because you get to see people you haven't seen in years. And I don't know, it's just a good, warm feeling to be there and to be socializing with friends that you haven't seen so long.
Yeah.
It's a loving feeling.
With all these folks that I speak to from the doo-wop era, the British invasion, you know, it really hit these different groups in different ways. And some folks, it killed their career. Other folks, like Maurice Williams, he said that they made money at it, doing Beatles imitations and stuff like that. just like you said, you adapted to the music that was changing.
Yeah, we adapted to the change of the British invasion. Well, we used to do A Tripper and Satisfaction back when we did like club dates where you can do a whole hour and a half, two shows. You know, we did songs like that, you know. But on the regular circuit shows, you know, they only give you three shows and they want you to do your hit.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I know we got a chance to work with Tom Jones, Wet Eddie and the Rebels, Lynn Scott, all the British guys. I worked with them all. Jones became one of my closest friends. Whenever he comes to New York, he used to send his driver and pick up me and be at his best from my group and bring us to the show.
Oh, wow.
Another good friend, Keith Richards.
No
way.
He got
me to do some recordings with Aaron Neville. Thanks to Keith Richards and Mr. West that I got a chance. He did my album, My True Story. He played on it, plus he was the one that got Mr. West to bring me in to do the background.
Oh, my.
But they recorded My True Story.
Wow.
Yep.
That's another one to track down. This is the beauty of this for me. When I get to speak with folks like yourself, it fleshes it out and it makes everything more interconnected. And if that can make it a little bit more real. Now, I did notice, did you not put out some new music not too long ago? And this may actually be a few years ago. Christmas recordings, a few other things?
Yeah, well, I put out a CD, Eugene Pitt, Stepping Out Front. That's when I stepped off from the group and I did some beach music.
Okay. Mr. Pitt, I appreciate your time, your memories, and again, I look forward to seeing you in just a couple weeks now.
All right.
All right. Have a beautiful day.
God bless you, man. Give my love to the family. It was a pleasure talking to you.
And you as well.
All right.
All righty. Bye-bye. That was Eugene Pitt from the Jive 5, part of the lineup with the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2. That's in Upland, July 16th. Information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Also with the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2, Jimmy Stevens of the Safaris, Maurice Williams of the Zodiacs, J.T. Carter, founder of the Crests, and the only one I didn't mention, we'll hear from in just a moment, Shirley Reeves of the Shirelles. And then you
hello, I'm Isabella Salinas, and here's what's happening in your region. Tuesday, July 12th at 7:15 p.m., the 93rd season of the Redlands Bowl Summer Music Festival is happening off of 25th Grand Street in Redlands. For more information, visit aboutredlands.com. Friday, July 15th at 8:30 p.m., the Redlands Theater Festival will be happening at the Prospect Park off of 1352 Prospect Drive. The Redlands Theater Festival offers a wide variety of exciting and interesting theatrical experiences. For more information, visit aboutredlands.com. Saturday, July 16th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., the Old Miners Association presents the Big Bear Chili Cook-Off. Come see their Wild Wild West show, live music, and plenty of chili to try. For more information, visit theoldminersassociation.org. Thank you for listening. This is 91.9 KVCR.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. We are online at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Coming up July 16th in Upland, it's The Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 with Eugene Pitt of the Jive 5, who we just heard from, also Maurice Williams of the Zodiacs, Jimmy Stevens of the Safaris, J.T. Carter, founder of the Crests, and our next guest, Shirley Alston Reeves from the Shirelles. Now, some may know that the Shirelles came in with an original song, I Met Him on a Sunday, to enter into a high school talent contest. And what I just found out, though, they hadn't actually intended on entering the contest.
Oh, yeah. We actually came about because we were fooling around in gym in school, harmonizing, and we had already started this little group, put this little group together, because all the males were doing the vocalizing in the basements and the different apartment buildings, and you can hear the echoes sound so pretty. So we thought we'd start a group, and we did. And we were singing in the gym, fooling around, singing, and the teacher came back in and caught us. And she said, either we stay after school or we sing in the upcoming talent show. So naturally, we said we'd sing in the show. So we went home and we wrote a song. The decided to do our own music, and we wrote a song entitled I Met Him on a Sunday. That came about while we were babysitting. And we were just trying to figure out how to write a song, because we were not musically inclined, so we didn't know how to write notes and any of that stuff, or read notes.
So you wrote I Met Him on a Sunday. Were you calling yourselves the Honeytones at this point?
No, so we called the Pequellos. Pequellos, Beverly gave us that name, Beverly and the Shirelles. And Florence thought it was horrible. So she said we have to, the woman that owned our company, Florence Greenberg, said she didn't like that name. So she wanted to call us the Honeytones. And we didn't want that name. So we made our own name up, Shirelles, because we thought it was pretty and, you know, had a nice little ring to it. And that's what we became, the Shirelles. But we sang on the talent show in school, like I was saying. We went ahead and sang the song. We wrote the song. I Met Him on a Sunday. I said, everyone just took a day of the week and say something. You know, we clapped our hands and we made a little do-ronde-ronde, little background. And, well, I met him on a Sunday. And Mickey says, and I missed him on a Monday. And then we went through the week like that, and then we did it again and again. And we put the hand claps and the background on it. And it was pretty good. So we sang that at the talent show. And we received a standing ovation.
One of you met him, one of you missed him, one of you found him by Tuesday, finally, and then finally one of you kissed him on Thursday.
That was me.
Okay, you were.
And he didn't show up Friday either. Didn't come back. But then Mickey says when he showed up Saturday, then Beverly says, I said, bye, my baby. And then we went into the do, you know, deep down in the run day. It was a cute little song.
It was a cute little song. It was great. And this one got you noticed. So was Florence Greenberg, her daughter was one of your classmates? Is that how the connection was made?
Yes, but we didn't know her, by the way.
Oh, okay.
She made herself known because she was following us and asking us to come and sing for her mom, who owned this record company. We would actually dodge her. We'd go the other way around to avoid her coming out of the school. Finally, I said, well, let's go see what she's talking about. Maybe, I don't know. Let's go and see what it's all about. So we went to the mom's house. Her mother, Florence Greenberg, wanted us to be a project for her son, who was blind, Stanley, and he was a music major. She had a nice house, so we said, okay, it looks pretty good. Maybe something to do with this record company. It was called Tiara Records, and so that was very disappointing to us so far as big-time record companies, you know, like back then with an RCA Capital, you know.
Sure.
But when she said Tiara, we said, oh, boy, that's nothing. So we just kind of brushed it off. But when they showed that interest, you know, and she was really interested in us as a project for Stanley, a son, as I said, he was blind, and a music major, and he was thrilled. He was thrilled with it. He thought it was the cutest song. He ended up producing that record for us.
Nice. This one then, I guess, got you over to Decca, so there's your recognizable record label for
Yes,
you.
But it didn't do much good, because Florence gave it to Decca because she thought they could do more for us, and she thought, of course, that we just probably would just be a one record artist,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
So when Decca, we didn't have much success with Decca at all, as a fact. And so they let us go, and she took us back.
This is dedicated to the one I love. While I'm far away from you, my baby, I know it's hard for you, my baby, because it's hard for me, my baby, and the darkest hour is just before dawn.
One of the big hits in my eyes, and it was, I suppose I knew it either by the Mamas and the Papas or the Shirelles first. I really don't know what's in my... Absolutely. I didn't even realize, though, that yours was a cover. I thought that was the original. How long had Dedicated to the One I Love been out before the Shirelles covered it, the first time, that is?
It was fairly new. When we were in Washington, D.C., we were on a show with the Five Royals. I believe one of them or two of them wrote the song, Dedicated to the One I Love. And we fell in love with the song. And we would run downstairs from our dressing room and watch them perform it so that we could learn it every day. We came back home when we finished the show down there. We were there for a week, and we came back home, and we told Florence that we wrote this terrific song. So we sang it for her, and she said, wow. You know, we wanted to record the song. Just before, when she was going to get the label copy and everything, she said, you sure you girls wrote this song? Because if not, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So we looked at each other and we told her the truth. We said no, we told her it was from the Five Royals. And then she looked it up, of course, and got all the information from the record.
Sure. This is dedicated to the one I love. Oh, wow.
And she let us do it, and Dara sang lead on it, by the way.
Okay, wow. I was going to ask if it was her decision to have you singing a cover, but it turns out she didn't even know it was a cover. You guys.
She sure did not. She didn't even know she hadn't heard it yet, I suppose, or paid attention to it.
That is beautiful. Oh, my gosh. That's Shirley Reeves, original member of and namesake for the Shirelles. Shirley is part of the lineup with the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 in Upland, July 16th. Tickets and more information at affordablemusicproductions.com. So you guys did end up doing Dedicated to the One I Love a couple of times, once with Decca and then later on with Scepter. But I'd love to hear now about how Greenberg brought in writer Luther Dixon. Now, I just spoke with J.T. Carter of the Crests, and he had a lot to say about the Four Buddies and Luther Dixon and Otis Blackwell. So I understand it was you and Luther Dixon that co-wrote Tonight's the Night, one of your next biggies.
Yes. I actually did most of the writing, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And actually, Florence told me that it would make it easier for me to, you know, get my royalties and blah, 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 if I went that way, read that route, basically. And I did. I went ahead and they put it out.
Yep.
We had a little success with it, so I'm happy still.
When you started working with Dixon for that first time, was he known to you as this wonderful songwriter, part of this incredible team of writers, the Four Buddies and all that, or was he just...
We knew nothing about that.
Okay.
We knew nothing about it. I remember being on the elevator in 1650 Broadway, where, you know, our record company label was, and he got on the elevator, and Florence was on the elevator with us, and she said, "Hello, Mr. Dixon." She said, "I would love to talk to you. I'd like to have you to work with my girl here." We didn't pay much attention to him because we didn't know who he was. Then she told us, you know, later on, but we didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Not at all, because we were always out of town. We were working so much. We used to do all those pretty one-nighters with Irving Fell tours and then Benedict Clark tours. It was just crazy, but it was crazy fun. We loved it.
Absolutely. It was, I guess, Tonight's the Night or sometime around this time. This is when you were able to start getting these gigs with Little Richard, Etta James. Is this maybe when you first started really seeing the rise and success of the Shirelles?
We didn't even realize our own. You know, people used to tell us. I recall coming from Passaic. We lived in Passaic, New Jersey. We used to take the bus in New York into the office, and we'd like to walk from the bus up Broadway. And people would pass us on different ones, different artists, different people or writers, and they would look at us and say, "You girls did it again. You did it again," you know, saying that we had a hit record, you know. Tonight you're mine completely. You give me your love. We were like, wow, you know, we were headed for the office, and we'd get in the office. And one time they were in there, they were dancing around, and we said, "What's going on? What's going on?" They say, "You girls have crossed over." We said, "Crossed over where?" We didn't even know what they were talking about.
Wow.
And she said, "Into the pop market." And because she was explaining to us, she said that way, she said the little white children would have more money to buy records, more so than the little colored children back then would have to buy the records. She said, "So our sales would be much better, you know, much higher." So that's how she explained it, us being in the pop market. And I remember, too, we wanted our picture on our first album cover. And she said, "No." And she actually took Beverly's gown, actually. They put the backdrop of paper, you know, roll the paper up, and they laid it on the floor with the 5 and 10. They got this little round dressing table and bought a picture. You know, he had the pictures are inside the frame already.
Sure.
Some guy's picture was in the frame, and they set it up, and she put a little tablecloth on it and called it album Tonight, Tonight. I remember it, but we wanted our picture on it, but said no, because it wouldn't go well in some of the homes.
In this picture, this was basically the equivalent of a wallet sample. It was just what...
Exactly.
Nobody knew the guy.
Because I know some people have asked me during the course of the years ago, they should say, "Well, who's that guy in the picture?" I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, just somebody. You know, we didn't know who it was.
He'll come forward someday, Shirley. He'll come forward and find you at a concert. That was me, man. That was me. Wow.
Well, you got to be kind of old, isn't that, by now?
Yeah, I'd say. Okay. Well, one of the next big, big songs, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? This was a Carole King song, and of course she's recorded it since then, but had she already recorded it when the Shirelles did so?
No.
The Shirelles were the first ones to record this one then?
Yeah, she brought it to the office. I remember when she came, that was like her baby, you know, and she brought it to Florence for the Shirelles. Yeah, I guess she must have heard me, heard my voice, and wanted me to do it. I said to Florence, I don't think this is a Shirelle material. She said, why do you say that, Bubba? I said, I'm telling you, I said, I think it's a little too country. It's like, sounds like more like a country song, country western. But it was just the way that she performed it, you know, with the piano. You know, she plays a nice, bold piano.
Sure.
It's a 290, you know, she kind of drugged the words a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought so. And then when I heard it come to life in the studio, I said, wow, I loved it, you know, with the strings. And then I fell in love with the song. So.
And then you knew it would be something. This one became the first number one song by an African-American girl group, and possibly any girl group, period. You were talking about not really knowing the success as it was happening, but this one, do you remember seeing it climb the charts higher and higher and then eventually number one? Is this when the people were dancing in the office? Is this the point you were talking about?
Yeah, it might have been right in the beginning when that started to show up all over the place. Yeah, I do believe that. But, you know, I can't remember everything now. I can't remember all those little things. I'm up there now, you know.
Yeah.
But I can't remember all the little things, the little details. But I know that we were all thrilled when we found out that it was just steady moving, you know. It was just beautiful. And it was being played all over the place. We could hear it different places. It was just a good feeling. We were like, wow. Yet, still, you know, we weren't at home a lot to get the praise from our home folks. But we were out so much, you know. They kept us on the road a lot, believe me, which was fun to us. But later on, they took notice, I think, of us. Because we'd go to the same stores. We'd do the same thing, go to the same shoe stores and get our little shoes dyed to match our outfits and go buy our makeup and, you know, hair pieces. We were freaking the same stores all the time. We were just friendly and warm. I always think of it as our Mayberry. Our town per se was like our little Mayberry because it seemed like everybody kind of just melted in and felt friendly, you know, with each other.
Mayberry is a good place to be. That's all right. That is all right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're listening to KBC Arts on 91.9 KBCR. We are online at kbcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. We are in conversation with Shirley Reeves of the Shirelles, part of the lineup with The Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2, coming to Upland July 16th. AffordableMusicProductions.com for information and tickets, as well as program notes from past shows. We started seeing things again after Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. We had things like Soldier Boy and so many big, big songs that I've played for various reasons. But now, one that I wasn't familiar with before, and I hope I can track it down, one called Shh, I'm Watching the Movie. This,
oh, you know that one?
Well, no, that's the thing. I don't know about this one, and just by title alone, it almost screams out Lieber and Stoller. Is this a novelty thing? Really? Like, Shh, I'm Watching the Movie?
Yeah, but I can't sing it to you because I can't remember all that. I remember the song title. I have a whole slew of stuff, but I don't listen. I've never been one to sit and really listen to my own self.
Okay.
I used to go in the room when my mom used to play my music for her friends when they come by because she was proud, you know, and I would go in the bedroom. Because I didn't want to, I don't know if I was afraid of the criticism or just, I don't know, but you always feel like you could have did this a little bit better, you could have sang this part a little better or a little differently, maybe I should have went this way with that, but like my manager tells me, he says, you can't argue with success.
Yep.
I said, yeah, but still, you know, I could have did this or I could have did that. Nah, he did okay, he says.
We are all our own worst critic every time.
Yes,
yeah.
True.
To any port of far and shore, Now, the British invasion. I've spoken with so many folks now from the doo-wop Europe, and various people have said different things about the British invasion. Some doo-wop groups found success in Britain. They came over here, and then some of the doo-wop groups just went to England and made money there. Some lost gigs. Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, they said that they made money from it, doing Beatles imitations. How did the British invasion affect the Shirelles? Or did it, even?
Well, I know that we had a song called Sha-la-la. And Manfred Mann covered it. It had just started to really, you know, make the chart. And then Manfred Mann's group came out and covered it. We were mad at them. Not really, you know, but hey, if it's okay, you know, it's okay. If you're trying to make some success over one of the songs, it's okay. Later on, Ringo did Boy, Ringo Starr.
Oh, wow.
And they also recorded Baby It's You after us. You know, they said that we were their favorite female vocal group.
Wow.
Yeah, I get requests for that too. I do it.
It's okay.
I sing it.
Well, now there is another. This is just a wonderful accolade that had to be wonderful. I just read this today a few minutes before you called. There is actually a Shirelles Boulevard. Tell me about this. Where, when, and how?
In Passaic, where we started, right there at Passaic High School, they dedicated the street to us, and it's called Shirelles Boulevard. Also, at the high school, we started right in the high school auditorium. Now it's called the Shirelles Auditorium, and they have a showcase there with memorabilia in it from us.
Do you ever go back there for appearances and whatnot?
We have been, yes. I think we wanted to try to put something together. Perhaps we can do something for scholarships or something.
Yes.
You know, you got to try to keep something going. It's the right thing to do.
That's one of the things that I hear from almost every person that I've spoken to. There's minor joking around about the fact that all of the original fans are about 68 to 75 or so.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, all of those folks have passed it on to folks my age, and hopefully will be passing it on to other folks. And surely you've seen different generations out there in the crowd.
Right. They all know something. They know something so much. I don't know if they know, some of them know it from the Beatles singing our stuff, and they rightly come out and tell us it's Shirelles' song. Or if they heard it from us, like you said, parents, grandparents, playing the records. I hear that all the time, that that's how they learn, and they learn to love the music from through their parents and grandparents. And it's great. It's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose a lot of the success in passing this music on to the next generation, the Shirelles ended up being ranked part of the 100 greatest artists of all time. That is incredible, with two of your songs being ranked in the top 500 greatest songs of all time. Were you notified about this when this ranking came out from Rolling Stone?
No. No, it was not. There's only two of us left, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure whether Beverly was notified or not, but I don't think so.
That's Shirley Reeves, original member of and namesake for the Shirelles. Shirley is part of the lineup with the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2 coming to Upland July 16th. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. Are there ever any performances with you and Beverly getting together, or is this like two different Shirelle teams at this point?
I don't go as a Shirelle. If they advertise me as the Shirelles, I heard it been clarified. I've actually turned down work. I've actually went to a job and turned around and came home because I worked for this promoter many times. And he knew that I do not do that. The Shirelles are the Shirelles. They're gone. Two of them are gone. Doris is gone. The one that's being dedicated to What I Love. And Mickey Addy Harris.
Yeah.
So it's just Beverly and myself. But she's not interested in getting back together with me as a group because she's been working so long. I've been doing this since 76.
Yeah.
I'm on my own. I had my daughter. I stayed off for like a year and a half. And then I came back to work because my manager bugged me to death. Back out. Yeah. He's telling me all the time. He says you shouldn't hold back your voice and your talent from the world. He says they love you. They love your voice. And I said, oh, okay, enough with the smooth in there. Yeah, come on. So I told him, I said, okay, if you get me a job in Bermuda. He knew I loved Bermuda.
Sweet. Nice.
If you give me a job in Bermuda, I'll come back and I'll do it. He said, you promise? I said, yeah. But I figured they wouldn't take me without the Shirelles because we used to play there together. And we played so many times and we were always at the place that we played down there. So I said, they're not going to take me by myself. I forgot all about what I said to him. 2 weeks later, he called me telling me, okay, get ready. I said, ready for what? He says, I got you the job in Bermuda. I said, get out of here.
Way to go, Randy.
Then I panicked. I had given all of my gowns to Doris, And my shoes, even my shoes, because we wore the same size shoes and everything. I gave her my shoes so she wouldn't have to switch up and buy her own new outfits or whatever. and I said, I can't. I have nothing to wear. That's the first thing I said. She said, well, what about my things? Buy something to wear, you know, buy some new things. I said, well, I don't have any more shoes. I don't have the shoes. I don't have anything left. I can't. I started panicking. I said, I don't have a band. I don't have anything. She said, well, go look at some showcases. And that's what we did. We went out to Long Island and I found this band and I had one girl in it and they sang background for me, and I sang with them, and Night Fever was out, you know, the John Travolta stuff, so they were doing that kind of stuff, and I said, okay, I'm going to give you a tape of the things that I do. You learn the background and the music, I'll learn what you're doing. So we combined them in an ovation first night.
Nice.
We did well.
Yeah.
I like the sound of the vocals. And it worked out because I didn't have any background girls with me then. I took two girls later. The band that I had, their families didn't want them to go on the road. And, oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
And I started picking up a lot of jobs. So I got two girls and we had another band.
I'm very thankful that you are still performing. And just as you were talking, I did the math really quickly. You've been doing this on your own since 76. That's a 40-year career even after you left the Shirelles. That's a long time. My gosh, Shirley. We're thankful to Randy for getting you back in and getting you down to Bermuda at the very least there.
Yeah.
Just a couple more things before I wrap up. I want to ask you what you think is the most overlooked Shirelles song. Perhaps this is because some were released only as singles and never made it to the albums, or what the case was. I've always loved Everybody Loves a Lover. You already said that you didn't really listen to your own stuff.
No, I'm not. I don't just sit down and listen to my... You know, a lot of artists play their music in their homes and stuff all day and listen to different things. I never do.
Mm.
It took me the longest time to listen to the whole album.
Mm.
But Our Love is Becoming a Thing of the Past, one of my favorites. Foolish Little Girl, and that was like, I think, our last record, I think, was Foolish Little Girl. It was a cute song, and it could have pushed that a little bit harder. It might have made it. Might have been better.
One other thing then, I suppose, with the Shirelles having had so many hits, what are the biggest audience pleasers today? You know, you can answer this a variety of ways. Just, hey, it's Soulja Boy. Okay, that's it, kid. Or it can be easily, this is what we love to open with. This is what we always close with.
I have to do Soulja Boy and We Still Love Me Tomorrow. Actually, before, really. I have to do Mama Said. You know, I usually open up with that, then I do Baby Peel, then I do Foolish Little Girl, then I do Tonight, Tonight, then I do Everybody Loves a Lover, then I do We Still Love Me Tomorrow, then I do Soulja Boy.
Okay.
I usually do them in that order. It depends on how long they give me on the show, you know.
Sure.
And then I can add some other things. And lots of times you can't do a whole bunch when there's a lot of artists. Things that you would like to do, you know. And when I have long, long shows, I like to do the guy stuff. I do Drifters, I do a Little Richard, I do
the
Four Top.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm telling you, I do medleys.
I think you'd have to.
I have fun with them.
Even if the songs are only 2.5 minutes to begin with. So.
Yes. Yeah, isn't that funny? Years ago, you had to be really, really careful not to go over, a minute and something?
Yeah, Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, they've got a record for having the shortest song to make it to number one. That was Stay, is only
Stay.
About a minute and a half long.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
I love Maurice.
Oh, he's
a nice show.
That was a great conversation. It's, yeah, you and along with Maurice and the Zodiacs, JT I mentioned already from the Crests. We also have Jimmy Stevens from the Safaris and Eugene Pitt from the Jive 5. This is, I'm sure, such an incredible reunion for you every time. There's got to be almost as much fun, more fun, backstage than there is you get
we
on...
We all enjoy each other, you know, and talking. Sometimes, you know, you kick it around about the, you know, the old days and different things that happened and funny things. It's still wonderful. Still a good feeling to work with my other recording mates. We just enjoy one another. That's what it's all about.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And Shirley, again, these concerts out here in the Ontario, Upland, California area, these have been so, so well received. They have been literally packed houses every time. I mean, literally packed houses every single time that I've gone and heard of. So I'm looking forward to this. I know that there are a lot of people looking forward to this. And again, it's so well received, and I appreciate your time once again.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
That's Shirley Reeves from the Shirelles. Shirley is part of the lineup with the Legends of Doo-Wop Volume 2, along with J.T. Carter of the Crests, Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, Eugene Pitt from the Jive 5, and Jimmy Stevens of the Safaris. That's in Upland, July 16th. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com.
I'll love, 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 love you.
My heart belongs to you.
I could never, never stop loving
you. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Shirley Reeves, Eugene Pitts, and to Nathan Gothels. He and Don Gothels make up Affordable Music Productions, producers of The Legends of Doo-Wop, Volume 2. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Sula Ahmad, Isabella Salinas, Manuel Rogers, and General Manager Alfredo Cruz. Beyond the music of the Shirelles and the Jive 5, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.